kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Ball squad, ball squad, shoot for the skill shot, it's a house ball. Ball squad, ball squad, shoot the green like a mock jackpot. Mike is the simulator, Matt is the zen. Show with the milky voice, savage the U buffet. Ball squad, ball squad, with a ball squad.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm getting to take a break from housework hell.
You're still doing the housework.
Yeah. Still doing the housework. The bathroom is done, but the kitchen is still in progress. It's a slow and steady bitch of a progress.
I believe in you, Cole. You can do it.
We took a day or so. I think it was Sunday and part of Monday where we were like, we're just not going to do shit. We just need to not look at hammers and nails for a couple hours.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I can't wait until next week when this is all no longer timely. Yeah.
Yeah. Nailed it.
But we are not alone today. We are being joined by not one, but two fantastic guests, Chris Baker, Mel Kirk, Zen Studios. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Oh,
it's good day. It's craziness right now.
Good craziness or bad craziness?
It's good craziness. You know, Zen is leveling up every day, I feel like, and that's a good thing.
I would go so far as to say it's excellent craziness.
I want to point something out before we get started with any questions and stuff. I want to say that you guys are actually not here to talk about pinball in the traditional sense for a change, necessarily.
Well, it'll come up, obviously.
I mean, it will inevitably come up, but I just want to be the one to break that barrier and go, this isn't about pinball. This is not ball squat.
Oh no, it's ball squat. I played the theme.
It's always ball squat. But
I wasn't aware we made other things than pinball.
I wasn't either. And then this comes across my lap and I'm like, what the fuck? Who is this? This isn't what I thought that was gonna be given a code for. How do I move?
It's a something else entirely.
So what is this something else?
I'm going to let Chris talk about it. He's the creative genius, and he's a writer, and he knows what the heck's going on. Chris, what did we make?
Those are hefty claims.
Oh, yeah, I just remembered. We did make a game that wasn't a pinball game. It's called Operencia, The Stolen Sun, and it is old-school, first-person dungeon-crawling RPG, updated and kind of modernized for today's audience with stuff like Unreal 4 graphics and just kind of more kind of streamlined menus and stuff like that. A lot more focused on storytelling, which was kind of my main part of the project. And it just came out on Friday, March 29th. And so far, the reception has been fantastic. All the reviews are positive, and everyone who's played the game, we had it at GDC and PAX recently. And as far as we could tell, everyone was digging it. They kept playing as long as they could until we had to kick them off in some cases. So, you know, it's all kind of rooted in, Central European mythology and folk tales. You know, we are basically the Zen America that you have here. You have, Mel is in California. I'm in New York. And the rest of the studio pretty much is in Hungary. So, we kind of took advantage of that, and basically the entire game is based around folk tales and different types of mythology that haven't really been explored in games before because they're all kind of Hungarian and Central European in nature.
Now, how did you guys come about wanting to do a first-person dungeon crawler? When people think of Zen, they think of pinball, obviously. So yeah. What led to the decision to jump far, far away from the pinball realm and do an RPG?
Yeah, you know, it's actually a very similar line of thinking. You know, I was obviously not there when we did our first pinball, and I came in midway through this project. But, you know, basically when we came out with Pinball FX, like pinball as a thing was kind of dead. You know, there weren't really any new real machines coming out very often, just a few here and there. There wasn't much going on with digital pinball either. So, you know, we just kind of were like, how can we take this kind of classic form of gameplay and kind of modernize it? And if you played Zen pinball games, then you know they're also very much video games and you know, as much as they are pinball games. So we kind of took that same mentality and was like, what's like an old school kind of genre that we just don't see very much anymore that we really want to play? And the answer was the games like Wizardry, The Bard's Tale, Might and Magic, Eye of the Beholder, games like that. A lot of our developers kind of grew up playing those kinds of RPGs, and we wanted to do it more, and there's just not that much out there anymore. So that's kind of what led to that decision.
And also, the guys on the core team, they came to us with, you know, this is where I got to just sit there and say, all right, tell me what you want to do, guys. And I just, like, I was almost just blown away by the sheer passion, the vision, how much they believed in it. When you get a group of guys together who want to make something that bad and they're going to put everything into it, how can you not do it? So, you know, sure, there's like some opportunity there, but like, man, if you play the game and you see the attention to detail and the love and the care, it's like a love letter to dungeon crawlers. And I was just so happy with the effort that the team put into it. And Zen was ready to take a chance. You know, we made other non-pinball games before, Castle Storm, Kickbeat, Infinite Mini Golf, and whatnot. And we have huge aspirations, and this is a time to really step out. And this is our biggest production to date. And we've got like voice characters and crazy combat systems and super deep RPG elements in there. I mean, we really went for it. And just sitting here really happy that people like it.
What has the response been so far?
Yeah, well, as we record this, it's an 82 on Metacritic. So that's very, very exciting to us. Literally every actual review that we have so far is in the green on Metacritic. So that exceeds my expectations. I thought people would like it. I didn't realize they'd like it as much as they do. You know, just reading people's tweets and Reddit posts and stuff, most stuff is very positive. And, you know, there's the occasional dissenter here and there, but it's kind of a niche genre. So, you know, not everyone's going to get it, but that's fine too. But thankfully for us, everyone who seems really interested in playing is really enjoying it.
Yeah, it seems to be like a level of validation for us, especially internally. We're just really happy with the response that we're seeing when people talk, you know, give us feedback on the game. And then when we announced it back in December, it quickly caught the eye of like Microsoft and Xbox and Microsoft and Epic. And we were just, you know, we went with them for some exclusive platform distribution because we knew we would need a, you know, one of the things that's difficult for any developer these days is just discoverability and marketing and all that. And so they were really into it. And we're like, we want to work with people who are really into it. And they've just given us a lot of help and a lot of visibility. So, you know, it's cool to be validated by massive partners like that and to kick the game off on their platforms.
I was going to ask when – oh, go ahead, Cole.
You guys have gotten quite a bit of flack online on some of your forums and stuff for the exclusivity deals. There are plans to come to other platforms in the future, though, right?
I can't confirm anything today, but I'll just say that the nature of these deals do allow us to come to other platforms in the future. And, you know, I can't say exactly what those are or when it will be. It's really funny because, yeah, we thought we were getting a lot of flack too, but I think it's pretty isolated to like 77 people.
And they all just hate Epic Game Store.
They do. That is the Epic.
I did my research this morning.
But I can tell you that more people, I can't give you a number, but I can tell you way more people are into it on Steam than aren't into it. And that's evidenced by what's happening with our wish list, which maybe is going to be a GDC talk someday. And we'll tell, you know, we plan to maybe show and talk about what happens behind on the back end of Valve, you know, and Steam when you decide you're not going to release a game there after you've already announced it.
Yikes.
I tell you, it's not a bad thing. You're going to get headlines.
You heard it here first. You might have heard it here first. I don't think we've talked about that anywhere before.
No, but it's just, you know, it's the thing is the market is so segmented. We're talking about billions of people now playing games, and they all play them different places. They find out about them in different ways. And, you know, games are never done. Like, we shipped up Orencia March 29th, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff we could do with it, and the game could look and play differently at a future date. And so this is like the first iteration, and it's so far so good.
Cole brought up the damn it, I have a question.
Show now.
It's related to yours.
Oh, go ahead.
Cole brought up the Steam and Epic Store issue. What led it to being an Xbox exclusive? Because when you think RPGs, you usually think either Nintendo or PlayStation, not really Xbox. I'm thrilled that it came to Xbox. So what led to coming to Xbox first?
Well, maybe because Xbox is not known for RPGs.
Yeah,
maybe they want to be known for RPGs. One, it's a super high quality game. Microsoft and Zen have worked together previously quite a few times. Pinball FX originally was a first party title. Castle Storm was first party. And while Operencia is not first party, you know, we know each other very well, and they have this huge Game Pass initiative, and they're trying to seed Game Pass with really cool games that might, you know, may be overlooked or just have a really well-rounded offering for the biggest variety of player. And they saw Operencia as something that was really filling that all that space for them. And we checked off a bunch of boxes, and we trust each other and we like each other. So, you know, we went out on we got married again. This is our third marriage.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
So you're not just on Xbox Game Pass. You're also Xbox Play Anywhere title with Operencia.
That's correct. Yeah, if you play on Win10 or on Xbox, you know, the game, it goes both ways there. We are for sale just in the regular Xbox store. So if you don't have Game Pass, but you want to play Operencia, you absolutely can.
And we talk about Game Pass on the show all the time and how it is absolutely worth the money. And Operencia is just another title that launches direct to Game Pass that makes you consider, you know, why don't I have Game Pass? If these games are launching direct to the service, why wouldn't you have it?
Yeah, I think that's a big reason for their being interested in us. They just want like a lot of quality titles that come out day one. And it was definitely something we're interested in.
Was there concern that maybe letting it be on Game Pass would cut into sales? Because we hear that a lot. You hear people, especially on the Twitter echo chamber, who are like, oh, well, they're just putting everything on Game Pass because they can't sell it any other way, or it's going to cut into sales and it's not going to do as well. Were you guys concerned with that?
Well, I'll just say it's never a simple decision. There's always a ton of factors that go into a reason for releasing a game like this on Game Pass. One, you know, Zen, I feel like personally, because I've been at Zen now for so long, like I've been a part of Zen for going on 12 years, working with the studio in some capacity and full time for like 9. I feel like we've been put in a pinball box, which isn't a bad thing, but you know, we do make things other than pinball, and pinball is always important to us. We love it. We're always going to do it, but we want to make other things, and we have other things. And I think going to Game Pass is another shot and an opportunity for us just to get a Zen game in front of as many people as possible and let them see what we can do. And maybe they say, whoa, Zen, you surprised me here. Like, wow, I realize you guys can make stuff other than pinball. So, you know, just wanting to get the game in front of as many people as possible, I think that's probably reason number one. Are we worried about sales? You know, the nature of these deals is different, I'm sure, for everyone. But for Zen, you know, it was a good deal for us is all I have to say. It's not like we just put it up there with nothing to show for it. So, you know, and that would be like we would never do that. So for us, it's more about exposure, getting people into a Zen game, letting them experience what we can do. And that's really important. I think not many people, maybe especially in this day and age, younger players might never look at a dungeon crawler or something that they would want to play. But so much of the feedback we're getting is that, like, I would have never played this game. And now we're engaged with that person. They now know who Zen Studios is. And hopefully they become part of our community and we can work with them in the future with other things we make.
Yeah, as a developer, it's like I like being on Game Pass just kind of to what Mel just said. It's like there's a lot of people who would probably never consider buying a game just because it's a genre they're not familiar with, or, you know, it just doesn't really entice them for some reason. But if it's there and, you know, it's you know, it's, I guess it's technically not free, but it's part of their service, then it makes it super easy for them just to jump in and be like, hey, you know what? I actually like this and maybe I want to see more of this kind of game. So I think the ultimate compliment to this game would be if somehow we see a new wave of new dungeon crawlers coming in. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. We need more dungeon crawlers.
I agree.
Although I have this awful habit when I'm playing dungeon crawlers, I need to hug every single wall and make sure I completely map out everything.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. You do get an achievement, I believe, if you touch every single corner of Operencia.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's one of our achievements.
See, I didn't even look at the achievement list, and that's rare for me because I'm usually like, okay, I launched a game. Let me go look at the achievement list because if there's something missable, I want to know before I get into that shit. But this time I was just like, I got sucked into it and I never clicked the button to check the achievements and I still don't even know what they are.
Yeah, well, if you want every single one of them, you're going to have to play super hardcore because there's some really hard modes that we have, including permadeath, where if your party dies, the game is just over. You have to start over.
I like roguelites and I don't think I'm masochistic enough to play this in that capacity. I put everything on normal.
Yeah, if you go normal, I think you're in for a nice, fun, challenging but not like stupidly hard trek through the 13 maps that we have. But you can make it harder on yourself if you like.
There's a lot to these maps, too. They're not just simple cut and dry, go from one end to the other, hacking and slashing and getting into battles. You've got to actually solve some puzzles.
That's true.
And there are a ton of secrets to find in each one.
Yeah, and some of the secrets you will need to beat later maps in order to access them in earlier maps. So you'll get like an item, like there's a hammer that can repair broken bridges, and you'll see a couple spots before you get to the hammer that are like that. And then, hopefully you remember them. And, you know, when you go to visit a campfire, you can go back to older maps that you played and you can reclaim that stuff.
That's cool that you're able to re-explore areas you've already been to.
Yeah. We wanted, just kind of give a lot of, I guess, replayability to the game as much as we can and just make you think like, you know, oh, like the, you'll, your characters will actually say things like, maybe we should come back later for this.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of a hint that, you know, you can't get there yet, but eventually you will be able to.
I've been criticized a few times for falling through holes in the floor because clearly I'm blind.
Having watched probably 50 people play our game over the weekend, that's a very common thing, especially in that first full dungeon. There's a lot of falling through floors going on.
Like, you're rolling through and you're like, I've got this. I figured out the puzzle. Flip this switch, flip that switch. Shoop, there you go.
Son of a bitch, I fell again.
My kids were getting a little tickled watching me fall through the floor like a fool.
Nice. Happens to the best of us.
And how much health did you lose?
I mean, I had already figured out that I could heal myself, so I was fine. We don't have to talk about it because I had magic.
Yeah, but that magic is limited. That's what I love about this game. You can't just store up 400 potions and heal yourself fully in between battles. You have to actually manage your resources in this game. And there were times I found myself thinking, do I go back to a campfire and rest? Or do I just try fighting another enemy or two and hope I level up and heal up that way?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to make a lot of little decisions like that. Yeah, you know, we wanted to make it challenging, and at the same time, it's like I said earlier, it's not like just like stupidly hard. So most of those situations, you're probably going to make your way through it. You know, sometimes you won't. I hope you didn't set it to permadeath in those cases.
Oh, no, I didn't. I am way too much of a pussy to do that.
Right. Well, I think you're way too much of a normal person to do that.
I think he just called all of us normies pussies at the same time.
It's okay. We are.
It's true.
So you mentioned that you had the game at PAX. What kind of fun stories were there of people who played the game at PAX?
We were like at an aisle. So people would just come by and you know, the game would just catch their eye because it's really pretty. And, you know,
it is a gorgeous game.
Yeah, they just stand there and talk to us for 10, 20 minutes, you know, about like, hey, I didn't know about this game, but I'm going to have to go check it out. One guy actually there on the spot whipped out his phone and bought it through the Xbox store on his phone.
That's awesome. So
that was pretty cool. We got a lot of people being like, oh, it's on Game Pass? Yeah, I'm going to go check that out tonight. So that was also very encouraging. And, you know, like even when the game, because the game came out the second day of PAX. So 3 of the 4 days that we had it there, you could actually just go home and play it. And, you know, I would tell people right away, you know, like this is out now. So, you know, just so you know, like in case they were like, oh, I'm at PAX and there's only so much time, I should go do something else. But no, they always stayed there. And they played for their 20 minutes and they were like, yeah, I'm going to go home and play this too. So so that was pretty awesome. I don't know if that's what I would have done. I would have, you know, I think it'd be, I for most games that are out, I would just be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go do that when I get home. But yeah, most people were, they played it then and there for as much time as they could. And, you know, that was great.
What kind of fun swag did you have for them there?
Well, Microsoft had some really cool pins. Microsoft's booth was all about their Game Pass. Like it was, just a bunch of titles that, are coming to Game Pass or that were very recently released on Game Pass. And they gave, like just these exclusive pins to, anyone who played a game. So those were pretty cool. And there was also, if you, I don't know if they picked their winner yet, but they had like customized consoles for several of the games that were there, including our game, which was just a gorgeous Operencia Xbox One X.
That thing was gorgeous looking.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you retweeted a certain tweet from the ID'd Xbox account, you were automatically entered into their drawing. I don't know if anybody's won that yet, but I'd like to know their reaction, actually. I'd like to see it sitting in their entertainment center, however they choose to display it.
I would want to have a system like that.
Yeah. I'm trying to get one for the Zen office somehow. We'll see what we can, magic we can cook up.
Did they only make one of them?
I think they made two of them. I don't, there's going to be probably another chance to win another one sometime somewhere.
So you have to enter for your own system?
Sad, right?
Yes, so.
Or give me the Void Bastards one. I played that game at GDC or saw it, and it was like they were right next to us in the demo, and I talked to, I forgot the guy's name, who is like lead on the game, but that's really, really cool game too.
Void Bastards. I haven't seen
like
that one.
First person shooter. It's like a first person shooter with a very like comic book aesthetic to it. So like really bright colors and a lot of like those kind of like dialogue boxes that are like, meanwhile, like, you know, like that kind of thing going on.
Nice.
It's very cool looking.
I don't know when it comes out. It's not here yet, but yeah, definitely. I would say that game looks awesome and I would love that Xbox.
Now I'm looking that up to see if it has a release date.
Yeah.
What was the pin? Because now I'm super curious and like I've been sitting here quietly searching to see if there was one on eBay or
if anybody tweeted. It was just like a circle, a black circle with the game logo on it.
Oh, okay.
Fancy.
Still very cool. Usually like there's all those convention whores who will sell their swag on eBay. And so I was like, surely at least I'll get to see it.
I've seen
it. But I can't find it.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the other pins were a little more like they gave me one of each. And some of them are like so specific to a game. I don't know what game it represents. It's like after I took it off of its little pin holder thing and put it on my lanyard, it was like, what is this symbol? I have no idea what game it's from.
Microsoft's pin game is no joke, though.
Oh, yeah, right.
They go above and beyond on some of those. Like the PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds frying pan ones are still probably my favorites.
I don't have one,
but I absolutely get tickled by them every time I see them.
Nice.
But do you have an eBay watch list with all this stuff that you want that you never got?
No, but I would have some explaining to do. Some of those get super expensive.
I imagine.
Like I can't imagine paying like $40 for the PUBG pin, and that's what most of them seem to go for.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy just for a pin.
It's a whole racket at Disney World too.
Yeah.
And then things like Kingdom Hearts come with their own exclusive pin that you can only get there.
Hmm.
That's how they get you. They sucker you in, and then you're just buying games for pins. Speaking of pins, you guys are also known for something related to pins, and that's pinball, which is not related at all. But it sounds similar, so close enough.
People call pinball machines pins. So that's actually not too far off.
Well done, Joe. You finally did a decent segue.
I tried.
That only took 6 years.
Yeah, I've been working on it. Purnell gets a couple of good ones every now and then. But what's new in the pinball world with you guys?
Oh, pinball is always busy around here. We've been releasing all sorts of Williams games. We Williams 3 was there in March. Theater of Magic and Safecracker and Champion Pub. So those have joined the collection. And we're working on a ton of that. And of course, if you're listening now, you know that, live at Star Wars Celebration, we recently just announced Star Wars Pinball is coming to Nintendo Switch as a standalone special game, both retail and eShop on September 13th.
Oh, it's so far away.
It is. This is probably the earliest we've announced a pinball game ever. But it is Star Wars. It is Nintendo Switch. It is retail. So for us, it's a huge undertaking. And man, we have to know what our date is. And since we know, we're just telling everybody when it is. And this is as Star Wars-y as a pinball game could ever be. We're totally excited about the new modes and new stuff we're packing into it. And it's all 19 tables. And it's just, it's awesome. It's the first time Star Wars is going to be on Switch.
That is awesome. All 19 tables. That's a lot of Star Wars tables.
That is a lot.
I bet you didn't know there was 19.
No, I didn't. I knew there was a lot. I didn't realize there were that many.
Yeah. We've been working. The franchise has done fantastic for us over the course of the few years we've been working on it. And, now we've got this really incredible collection, which really spans a lot of the Star Wars universe, ranging from movies and TV shows to different themes, locations, specific characters. So it's really, if you're into Star Wars and, you want a game that is just easy to pick up and play and that is just, super enjoyable and takes you across all elements of the universe, Star Wars Pinball definitely scratches that itch.
Yeah, I would imagine, especially with that many tables.
Yeah, it's crazy to think. I mean, I remember back when we were first working on this, we did Episode 5, Han Solo, and Boba Fett, I believe, were the very first package. And it's just cool to see, like, back then, all three of those tables felt really special and unique. But we've managed to do it all the way now through Table 19, where everyone, when you start it, it doesn't feel like any other tables. Lucas has been such an awesome partner working with our dev team. We've had so many great ideas. It's just every table really feels like its own individual game. And we've always tried to do that and just stay very authentic and not be copycat or anything. And, reflective all the way up to the last Solo pack we did with Calrissian and Solo and Battle of Mimbom. It's just, it's really cool how many there are. I don't know. I forget all the names of all of them. Chris, can you do them all?
Can I do them all? Oh, wow.
Let's play a game.
Yeah, I'll just say that I was just a fan of the Star Wars pinball tables when they first started coming out on the other platforms, and I think I've played all of them, very close to all of them if I haven't. I'm gonna try to go all 19. Let's see if we can do this. So there's the episodes. There's episodes 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. There's Rogue One and there's Solo. So there's 7 movie-based tables. Then there's characters. There's Han Solo, Darth Vader, Boba Fett, Calrissian Chronicles, droids.
You're up to 12.
Yeah, up to 12. So locations, it's Octo Island from Last Jedi and the Battle of Mimban from Solo. And then themes, so we're up to 14. So there's themes. There's Might of the First Order, which is like the theme of being the bad guy. There's like Jedi versus Sith in Masters of the Force. And there's oh crap. I'm only two away.
You can do it. We have faith in you.
X-Wings versus TIE Fighters and Starfighter Assault. So I'm missing a character. There's a character.
I counted 17.
Yeah, I think you're at 17. I was doing
17. Oh man. Okay.
Still 17 out of 19 is really, really good. I couldn't name that many.
All right. Well, I guess that's a passing grade at least.
Oh yeah, easily. I guess the big question is any news on a table number 20?
Clone Wars and Rebels, Chris. You forgot.
Clone Wars and Rebels, the TV shows. That's it. Yes.
Okay, there you go. There's all 19.
Ding, ding, ding. Winner, winner.
I guess the big question, is there any news on a table 20, 21, 22?
No, not right now.
you can't end on 19, though. Like, everybody in the world's OCD would kick in then.
No, we just made that as a pain point. We wanted everybody to be really mad there's only 19.
I can't place my tables in neat little rows on an icon. It would be terrible. We just need one more to even it out.
Yeah, that's the feedback we're going to get from everybody is, how could you only do 19? It's hurting my head.
You
what
bastards.
Do you have against even numbers?
See, now you should do that with your achievement values in games and make them off numbers, and that way you piss everybody off.
Somebody somewhere would find a way to blend that on the Epic Game Store.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no doubt the very first numbers that we would see would be 69 and 666.
Those you say are the that first. Like it's a bad thing, and I don't understand why.
That's where we can start. Then we can go into all sorts of other numbers.
You got to work with 420 if you're going with those numbers.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, there's 420 in there.
First three, there we go.
Oh, my Lord. So 19 Star Wars tables all come into the Switch later on this year. What led to this happening, to bringing them all to the Switch?
Well, when we launched Pinball FX 3 on Switch, as you know, we didn't release the Star Wars collections or the Marvel collections, which were probably the biggest omissions. And immediately everyone says, well, where's Star Wars? And, the business side of licensing and platforms and all that is very complicated. So there's just always a lot of lag and lead time to get new business done with companies like Disney. I mean, we're just little Zen studios, and then there's Disney, and then there's a new device called Nintendo Switch. So of course we wanted to bring them there, but it just took some time. And, we're just happy to be able to do it now. I mean, it was just always on our agenda. We knew the Switch is just an awesome device to play pinball on. With HD Rumble, and the tactile feedback you get in your hands when you feel the ball hit the bumpers, it feels really cool. And you turn the device, playing in vertical orientation. So that's really great. You can play it at home on the go. The device lends itself really, really well to pinball. And of course we want, our Star Wars pinball, which we love dearly, to be available for people to play there. So we're just finally able to make it happen.
Which is
the real
good.
Question is, which is easier to deal with, the angry nerds who don't have the tables that they want, or the brand licensors?
Two different situations.
They're both difficult, though.
Difficult. I like to think that Zen is a good partner. I think we're easy to work with. It's funny because Chris's background, actually, he spent time at both LucasArts, back when he used to be LucasArts, and Marvel. And Chris was actually one of our producers at Marvel Pinball during back in the day.
Yeah, I was one of those difficult people.
Yeah. So Chris,
so you've joined the light side.
You're easier to work with than a bunch of angry angry nerds, or.
I'm also an angry nerd. No.
Oh, okay then. You were double whammy. I guess they liked you, though.
I don't know. I liked to think that I was easy to work with and trying to make the games better. That was my goal in that position when I had it.
Well, let's find out. Mel, was he easy to work with, or was he a dick?
Well, you know, obviously he was a good guy to work with, because now he's a full-time Zen person. We've managed to snag him out of Marvel and Lucas and all these crazy cool companies to come to Zen. So I have nothing bad to say to Chris publicly. Now, Chris, if you shut off your microphone and leave this podcast.
I was just going to say it was just an 8-year master plan to finally wind up working at Zen, just to play the nice guy for a while.
You know how little kids playing Lord. With dolls have the two dolls and they'll be like, now kiss, and then they smash them together? Me and Joe are the kids sitting over here going, now fight, wham!
Well, true. The other reason we brought Chris in is to help us get our act together so we can be a better partner to Marvel and Lucas. It goes both ways.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we digress.
No. Oh, one last question with the Star Wars pinball. Is that just going to be a standalone game, or is there going to be a way to export those tables into Pinball FX?
It's just a standalone game by itself. It won't have any connections to FX. And it's for a few very specific reasons. One, you know, Star Wars on Switch is a special, very special occurrence and a special happening. The library itself is big enough to support really cool community features, and yeah, it just has to be its own thing, and that's that. So
because licensing is hard,
you can read between the lines. You can take educated guesses. It's probably all right.
Yeah, we'll go with licensing is hard. We've heard that on the show so many times over the years.
It's just, it is what it is. Star Wars is a massive IP, and it's going to be, you know, man, this year, I can't wait to see the film. I can't wait to watch the new TV show.
Yeah.
All the Star Wars happenings. I mean, it's just, you know, it's, we take it however we can be a part of it. We will. We'll fall in line and we'll make our Star Wars pinball and we'll get it out however we can.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Yep.
What other pinball is in store? Do you have other tables in the works, other properties, just more Williams, anything that you're able to talk about?
This year will be a year of Williams and a year of Star Wars Pinball and Nintendo Switch. And we're cranking away on all that stuff. There will be quite a few more Williams tables that will release. I think we're going to be announcing the next set probably in May. So you can keep your eye out there. And, you know, I think everyone knows we usually announce and ship quickly thereafter. So if that's any indication, that gives you an idea of the next release.
So sometime over the summer, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. And, hopefully we'll have a few, treats and surprises as the year goes on. No hint towards Halloween there, I guess. there's a lot of cool stuff in the Williams library that we're able to do. And there's some bigger, large scale things that we're working on, and it's not hard to figure out what those are. But you know, just we're after it all. We're gonna ship some. There's gonna be some really great moments with Williams Bally content in Pinball FX.
You're mentioning big titles and things that we can imagine, and Halloween, and all I can imagine is the Addams Family.
Well, there's a lot that can be released around that time. If you what's your knowledge like of Williams?
Not nearly as much as Grant.
Okay.
Which, unfortunately, he couldn't join us today. Yeah, I know you guys ran into each other. I want to thank you, both of you, for hanging out with Grant and sending me a birthday wish. That was amazing of you guys.
Oh.
That really made my day.
He had no choice.
That sneaky bastard.
Yeah. Too bad he's not here with us. He would have a... He would name off like 10 different tables that he thinks could launch at Halloween.
Oh, he would.
And then it would be really hard not to say yes or no. I would just be, you know, like that.
You would have nothing to say.
Nothing.
I love, I asked him if he would be able to join us, and he was, I'm pretty much busy except for, or he's free except for Wednesday. And I said, what about Wednesday in the morning? He said, nope, no Wednesday. That's the day I said I couldn't do Wednesday. Can't do Wednesday. Let's see if I could do Wednesday. Nope, still can't do it. Wednesday, that is. Wednesday. Wednesday is a no-go. Nope. Oh, wait. Still nope. That was his message to me. So
nice.
I love Grant.
Yeah, I try to. I see him actually now when I go to Santa Cruz. My wife's from that area, so whenever I'm in town, he and I go hang out, and it's cool. But we first met on the podcast, so
friendships for have that formed through this show. Yeah. Did you pick him up to do any music for you guys yet?
Not yet, but at GDC he met Chris as well, and we were talking about the future of Zen and all the different things we have going on. And I would very much like to work with Grant, so hopefully at some point we can make that happen.
You should see if Grant would do an Operencia remix album and just do a bunch of covers of the soundtrack.
I'm open to that.
I'll bring it up to Grant and see if he's interested.
Sure.
Oh, man. So anything else going on? I know we've been chatting for a while. I'm not sure if any other news that you want to talk about or any other discussions or topics.
I don't know, Chris. What do you think?
I would just say we're not done for this year.
Not by a mile.
Yeah.
I can imagine you guys have stuff coming out every other month, it feels, which is awesome. It's good to see all this content coming out and more stuff for us to play and consume and earn achievements on.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, if you guys were pleasantly surprised with Operencia and maybe surprised that this is a type of game that came from Zen when you know us for other things previously, this year will hold more surprises and hopefully we can continue to surprise you.
I would hope so. I mean, I was surprised when you guys put out a rhythm action game, and I was surprised when you guys put out a mini golf game. So, you know, I don't know what you guys could do that wouldn't surprise me at this point with how diverse your games are.
Yeah, we've been collecting a lot of different types of experiences over the years. What do you think, Chris? Dungeon crawling, mini golf, rhythm-based RPG?
If it doesn't have a battle royale mode, it won't ship.
Some of those Operencia maps can make some interesting golf courses, I think.
Absolutely.
Operencia DLC pack for infinite mini golf. There's your new theme.
Yeah, I just thought of it.
Operencia pinball. Yeah.
You really heard it here first.
Yeah.
Is Operencia pinball something that could potentially happen?
I don't see how we don't do that at some point. So I don't know. We got so much in front of us. It makes a lot of sense to make Operencia a pinball table. We'll have a meeting about that after this podcast.
I'm still hoping for kick beat pinball, where the flippers are just legs.
Yes. we talked about that before, didn't we?
I don't know.
Maybe not. I'm talking about to Joe. I think Joe might have met. Okay. Whenever I come on the show, I always feel like I get something that I like write down and I say, we need to do that.
Usually from Grant, though. He's the one with the good ideas. I'm just the moron who hosts this thing.
Yeah. Well, Cole, it's
Cole, did you have any other questions that you wanted to ask?
No, I really didn't. We kind of zoomed off from all over a few different topics there, but I think we got most of what I want to talk about as far as Operencia goes. Am I pronouncing that? Is it Operencia or Operencia?
It's Operencia.
Operencia. See, you guys have let me say it wrong this whole time and didn't care.
We knew what you meant.
Don't correct the redneck. It's fine.
Yeehaw.
I'm finding most people naturally say Operencia, but yeah, it is Operencia. Hmm.
You and your tricky names.
It's very similar to opera. Oh, yeah. I guess we didn't say where the name came from. Operencia is actually a real Hungarian word, and it actually translates to far, far away. But it's actually like a place that's kind of like hundreds of years ago. Just random storytellers decided that this tale I'm going to tell happens so far away. It happens beyond Operencia, or you know, like. Like they would use the word Operencia, or I think it's Operencian Sea. That was just a decided upon place that didn't actually exist, but it indicated that what I'm telling you happened really far away from here. So we just decided, you know, we needed a name for our land that we were creating, and it kind of fit the bill for that.
That's cool.
Yeah,
you learn things on this show.
I mean, I didn't learn it because I already knew it.
There you go. Then you're very well educated on this game.
I do my research because somebody's got to, and the host is Joe.
Yeah. I'm lazy.
So when I know that I'm going to do an interview, I get the Google machine out and I ask all kinds of questions. And then I try to like make a notebook of all I know about the game so that I don't sound like a dumb.
Look at you being all prepared and shit.
Yeah. But then I should have brought it up anyway. I was thinking how like you made a comment earlier and said Far, Far Away. And then they had already commented that, you know, it was Hungarian in its roots, and I was like, well, that covers that. Next.
I suppose so.
Yeah, you just go with it because it was just gonna all fall to pinball anyway. I was just gonna make sure it got thrown in there somehow.
Hey, but we had a good 25-30 minutes of non-pinball talk.
We did. I'm very impressed. Also, then we got into Star Wars. I've never seen a Star Wars movie.
Whoa, really?
What? So I was that. Just like glossed over. I apologize.
Can you name all 19 tables now that you know them all?
Clone Wars.
Wow. Close enough. You got them.
Nailed it. Han Solo. That's the funny thing is, like, I've never seen the movies, but I understand all the references because it's just pop culture. So now I'm just like, I don't even need to see them. Shit.
I'm pretty sure I heard your rooster.
Yeah, he's crowing. He has opinions too. His name is not Han Solo.
That's hilarious.
Oh, Lord. Well, Chris, Mel, it has been fantastic having the two of you on the show again. It is always a pleasure when you guys come on. Tell us one more time, Operencia, where is it? How much is it? How can people get their hands on it?
Operencia is available in the Epic Game Store and on Xbox One with Xbox One X support, Windows 10, and Xbox Game Pass. If you're going to buy the game, it is $29.99. And, ooh, yeah, that's where you get it today.
Today, right now. So get off your ass and go download it because it is awesome and it is absolutely worth checking out. Everyone else, stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with some more show. Mel, Chris, do either of you have any final words to end the interview?
No.
I really want to sing the Ball Squad song, but I won't.
Do it.
Do it.
I think I remember it. Ball Squad. Excellent. Ball Squad. Is that it?
Ball Squad, Ball Squad, go for the skill shot, it's a house ball.
House ball.
Ball Squad, Ball Squad, shoot the green, lock 'em up, jackpot. Mike is the simulator, Mel is the Zen. Joe with the milky voice, Stemmage the Uber fan. Woo! Ball Squad, Ball Squad. It's a Ball Squad.
There you go.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Mel and Chris for coming on and chatting about Operencia and pinball and all that other fun stuff. That was good stuff.
That was good stuff. It was so good, I forgot we did it.
It's only been a week. How can you forget?
Look, I barely get through the day.
The time for forgetting is next weekend show.
Oh.
Well, we release on Saturdays, and next Saturday is the 20th of April, which is
not at all a significant date.
Not at all. But it's kind of like when we did episode 420. We're going to celebrate April 20th the proper way.
But I can't celebrate the proper way.
But you could celebrate the best way you can.
Which is a lot of steroids.
Yes.
Because I get so giggly and hyped up when I've had so much prednisone. Like, for the longest time, I didn't understand. My pharmacy. Like the chick that fills my prescriptions, she's always like, oh my gosh, I don't understand why people get addicted to things until I started taking prednisone when she had some kind of injury. And she was like, and she's like, now, man, I can't get through a day without prednisone. And I'm like, lady, you work in a pharmacy. You need to calm the fuck down. And like, she makes me horribly uncomfortable to have to get my prednisone from her.
Oh, Lord.
And so I switched my prednisone to a different pharmacy. So I was drinking
when you said that.
So I wouldn't have to get my steroids from that lady. I was like, I can't do that anymore.
She's like, can I have some?
Because the last time I picked them up in there before I switched them to my other pharmacy, she was like bagging them up, and she looks at the pharmacist and she's like, you'd be proud of me. I turned one of these down today.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, girl, I am standing right here.
Please don't steal my pills.
So the funny thing is, like, I let them fill my opioids, but I don't let them fill my steroids. Y'all want to fill my Vicodin, go for it. But you're going to leave my steroids alone.
You want to know what taught me the joys of addictive medication?
What's that?
Dilaudid.
Oh, God. I have a funny story about Dilaudid.
So do I. You go first.
So when number 3 was 2 months old, my gallbladder shit the bed. And to the point, like, I went to the local hospital and they threw an absolute shit fit. They were convinced I had hepatitis. I was jaundiced. I was throwing up blood. My kidneys were failing. And they were just like, you have hepatitis. That's all there is to it. And I'm like, I can't have hepatitis. And, so they refused to treat me. They sent me to another hospital. And I got there. I kept like passing out in the ambulance on the way there and everything. I was damn near dead.
Oh, Jesus.
I got to the second hospital. And the first hospital had given me an injection of morphine before they were convinced I had hepatitis. And they give me the morphine. They wouldn't give me anything else. I get to the second hospital and I'm like, I don't know what they did, but they gave me that morphine shot and it made things worse. And he's like, yeah, because it's your gallbladder and not hepatitis. I'm reading the damn chat. Morphine will make your gallbladder contract.
Oh, no.
So we're going to give you Dilaudid. I'm like, okay, that's fine. He said, have you had it before? And I'm like, no. He goes, okay, so it can be really strong. And he said, you have it in here that you don't react well to medication. Because I'm like, I can take a Tylenol and I'm half dead from it. I can't hack medicine. And I'm like, yeah, I just don't. And he goes, okay. He said, so let's start small. Let's give you a half a dose of what I would normally give somebody, you know, your size, because I'm fat. And, and he's like, let's do a half a dose to start with. I'm like, okay, cool. So they give me the Dilaudid, and I kid you not, an hour later, I wake up, and the nurse is like, honey, she said, 5 minutes after I gave you that shot, you started talking about the stars in the sky. And I was terrified to leave you alone. And I have been sitting here for an hour. I was like, where the hell did you come from? And it got so bad. I was in the hospital for 5 days when I had my gallbladder. I had to have stents and everything because like it ripped open my common bile duct and just my stomach was full of fluid. It was awful. And I went septic. I damn near died.
Damn.
And it was funny because anytime after that time, she was like, I'm going to ask the doctor if we can cut that down to a quarter of a dose.
Oh, Jesus.
And then she's like, every time they had to come in and give me my Dilaudid for the rest of the time I was there, it was they'd have interns and residents, you know, like training them. And you could hear them in the hallway. They'd be like, oh, you got to come in. This is going to be hilarious. And then they'd come in and they'd sit there for like half an hour. That'd be weak because they were so afraid to leave me.
Oh, my Lord.
Because I'd go out of my head. But then they'd sit there and just listen to me talk out of my head for half an hour. And they had too much fun with my dilaudid delirium.
That is beautiful.
Yeah. And I didn't die, so.
That is absolutely beautiful.
Now we have to know your dilaudid story.
Well, mine was also gallbladder related, which is obviously fun.
Fuck boys.
Yes. But mine, I was having, you know, really bad pains from it. I had to call the ambulance, get taken to the hospital, mm-hmm. and I am like screaming in pain. I am beyond in pain, because when I had my gallbladder taken out a few days prior, they cut my liver.
Oh.
And it was just pouring bile all over my insides. Ooh. So I am in obscene amount of pain. I'm screaming in the ER, and they're like, you need to calm down. You need to quiet down, sir. And I'm like, give me something for the fucking pain and I will calm down. I am in a lot of pain and I'm just, you know, losing my mind because it hurts so goddamn bad. And they finally get my paperwork through enough that they're allowed to give me something for the pain. And they come over and they inject it into my IV. And I'm going from like,
that shit works, and it works quickly.
It was like near instantaneous. It was incredible.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
Now I know why people get addicted.
Yeah, they don't. For anybody listening and you having gallbladder problems, don't let them give you morphine, for the record, because it does not have the same effect that dilaudid does. I don't know, man.
Oh, man. Jeff, that noise. Jeff Ball hanging out in the chat. Jeff, how are you doing today, sir? I miss you. You're a good person. You should come on the show again sometime. Good stuff. But yeah, if people want to hear me actually do a full episode on painkillers, check out episode 70 of the show, which is called E3 Tylenol Party. That was after I had my back surgery, and I didn't want to miss an episode. So we did the show, like Chris came down, I think Bogue was there as well, and possibly Jacob, if I remember properly. They were just hanging out in the hotel room, the hospital room, and they just set up a microphone, and we did E3. Yes, E3 news while I was in the hospital, and like doctors are coming in during the show, taking my vitals and administering medication and doing all this other stuff, taking blood just during the show.
That's fantastic.
I don't remember anything about that show besides what I just said. Then again, my memory's kind of shit the way it is, so.
That's fantastic, though. Oh, I cannot promise that I will be so stoic, and because they are prepping me. I'm going to have back surgery at some point this year. So I'm probably going to miss the show the week that I have back surgery, and y'all can fuck off.
Well, you'll have to let us know when. Maybe I'll take a road trip, get Chris to come down, and we'll all just hang out in your hospital room. Yeah,
come hang out in my hospital room. I'm down for that. That would work. They give me road dilaudid, trip. And it's all over with.
I'll ask for some, too. Sir, do you have a medical condition? Nope, I just want some.
Yes, I have a medical condition. I have to listen to her voice every week. Do you hear this? It's a miracle my goddamn eardrums don't bleed.
For all I know, my ears are bleeding, but it's just my headphones are cupping the blood. Yeah. It's just dripping down my beard and getting stuck in there. And oh, man. We should probably talk about video game news because it's been...
Oh, yeah, that's a thing.
it's been 10 minutes since the end of the interview. 10 minutes and, like, 9 days.
You know, dilaudid, it does things to your
it does.
Time management skills.
Oh, man. The big news of the week, I would say, is that Sony is finally allowing players to change their PSN name. The first change will be free. Additional changes will be $10 each time, or $5 for PlayStation Plus members. And apparently not all games will support the new idea or the new ID, so I'm not sure what that entails. Sony does have an FAQ on their website with more information for people thinking about doing it, but it's nice to see that people finally have the option on PlayStation to change their ID.
I wonder if that'll encourage Xbox to allow a name change for free at some point. I mean, you get one, like when you sign up, they give you the generic ass randomized name and then you can change it to whatever for free.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if they'll like buckle down and give one freebie at some point.
I think it'd be nice if they just gave like Xbox Gold members the half off that the discount. Sony's doing.
Yeah, the discount would be a good thing too.
Yeah.
So I feel like there would be absolutely no point in me changing my name. If I did it, everybody would still just call me Eternal anyway.
I can't remember the last time I actually called you Eternal.
I can't either. You've been pretty dead set on calling me Cole there for a while.
Yeah.
You're just throwing out my government name.
Yep.
Terrible. Joke's on you. Cole's not my government name.
I know. You've told me that before.
You know, because you're on my Facebook. That's not my government name either. So there.
So you are lying to Facebook.
I am.
Well, I'm calling you by your Facebook name, so good enough. No Time for Games saying that he changed his gamer tag once. I changed mine one time as well, because when I first had an original Xbox, they had a free Xbox Live Gold weekend, and I had Burnout Revenge, and I wanted to play it online to try it out back in the good old cable internet days, and when fucking dial-up was still a thing.
No, jeez.
But I signed up as Joe Camnet, which is my name everywhere, and then I never followed through and actually kept Xbox Live Gold. Years later, when I got an Xbox 360 and I signed up for Xbox Live, I tried remembering what my details were for Joe Camnet, but I couldn't remember anything. And it was like tied to a bank card I didn't have. It was tied to a phone number I didn't have anymore, an address I didn't live at anymore. Mm-hmm. So I went with the name Joe Camisa. That was my gamer tag, was just my real name, which is a very, very smart thing to do, obviously.
You would be surprised how many times I see that in Rocket League, and I'm just like, really?
Yeah, I wasn't thinking that well back at the time. But they ended up doing their first gamer tag purge, and I was lucky enough that Joe Camnet was one of them. So I paid the $10, got Joe Camnet, and now I am Joe Camnet.
Nice.
And that is my name everywhere. I've been tempted to change it to SML JoeCam, but then I'd have to change it everywhere, and that would require paying multiple times for things. And no, I'm just good with JoeCamNet. That's uniform. That's my name everywhere. Steam, PlayStation, Nintendo, Xbox. So I'm happy just being JoeCamNet.
That's the other thing. Like, I've been Eternal Rage so long that it's manifested itself into being everywhere I use gaming related anyway. So it's just like, well, might as well stick with it at this point.
Yeah, might as well.
Everybody's going to call me Eternal that doesn't call me Cole anyway.
Like me.
Yep. But there have even been points where my own husband has been on the Xbox and just straight up calls me Eternal. Everybody else is doing it.
Oh, boy. Let's see, what other news was there? 10 games, a whopping 10 games, are leaving Xbox Game Pass at the end of the month. Have you seen these?
I didn't. I didn't see the list of what's going, so it sounds like I probably need to play a few things.
Yeah, first off, Homefront The Revolution.
Oh, I'm a little sad about that.
I know, because we were playing that.
Yeah, I need to make Stu to play it with me, too.
Well, you have until the end of the month.
Shit, it's a vision. Yep.
Both of the Ollie Ollie games, Outlast, Pump BMX, Sheltered, Sonic & Knuckles, The Golf Club, The Swapper, and Unmechanical Extended. Outlast leaves on the 21st, the rest of them leave on the 30th.
Huh.
It's not all bad news, though, because 6 games were announced as coming to Game Pass.
And they are big games.
Yes, they are. April 11th, so this week we got The Golf Club 2, making up for The Golf Club leaving, and Prey, which is a big one.
That is a big one. And I've want to play Prey, and I just didn't want to pay for Prey.
Oh, you cheapo.
So now I get to play it anyway.
You do.
So there we go.
April 18th, The Walking Dead, A New Frontier, and Monster Hunter World.
I did not see that coming.
Me neither. That is a huge one.
Like, if you could have asked me what my list of games going to Game Pass would have been, Monster Hunter World wouldn't have even been in the top 1,000. I'm glad it is, though. I wanted to try it out. So there's two that we're getting that I'm going to have to try out.
Yeah. And then April 24th, Resident Evil 5 and Life is Strange 2, Episode 2.
I haven't even got a chance to play episode one yet, but that's okay because it's in Game Pass. If I'm not mistaken, Life is Strange episode two is launching straight into Game Pass.
No, it's 90 days.
90 days. Oh, yeah. Has it already been out? I didn't think that season two was already out. So I didn't think that. That's not bad though. That's a pretty good pace.
Yeah, you know, you get to play a brand new release only 90 days after it comes out. That's pretty damn nice.
Yeah. I'm thinking the first Life is Strange had been out like 6 years before I got to play it. So I'm breaking records over here at this rate.
Yeah. The most recent commercial for Smash Brothers Ultimate leaked the presumably impending arrival of a stage builder mode for the game, as it was a tile shown on screen in the menus. Seems like a pretty blatant slip to me, so I'm going out on
intentional.
Yeah,
Their brother like watches those trailers and previews videos frame for frame.
Yeah,
so they don't put anything in that shit they don't mean for you to know that it was there.
Yeah, that seemed pretty, you know, because they showed a picture of it on different websites. It's like, oh look, here it is, Stage Builder, and it looks so obvious. It was intentionally, they could have been on any other menu that they wanted to, but they chose to be on that menu.
Yeah. And you know, that's gone through dozens of people. Somebody was going to catch it.
Yeah. So. But yeah, Stage Builder coming to Smash Brothers. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. It's cool to see the different stages that people make.
Yeah, I haven't played it. I don't have a Nintendo Switch, so Smash is out of my realm of expertise, but I'd be curious how it would work out. One day, I'll like sell a kid. Well, nobody would even want to buy one of my diseased ass kidneys. So. You didn't have to get choked up over it. It wasn't that funny.
No, oh, man. I think I'm coming down with something. I blame you.
Keep it to yourself. I don't need any more fucking germs.
Disney has confirmed during an investor's call that their Disney Plus streaming service will be launching on Xbox, PlayStation, and surprisingly, the Switch as well.
Oh!
Yeah, it's surprising because while they have YouTube and Hulu, they are missing important things like Amazon Prime and Netflix still.
Wait, there's no Netflix on a Switch?
Nope, no Netflix on the Switch. Yeah, I know, right?
I'm left speechless. Like, how often does that fucking happen?
Hopefully it'll show up eventually, but yeah, I'm surprised. No Netflix on the Switch still.
But you're going to have Disney. And I'll give the Disney Plus thing credit. The whole time everybody's been up in arms over it, I'm like, this shit is so fucking expensive. There's no way it's going to be affordable. I don't even care. It's going to be like $25 a month if you're lucky. And I ain't paying for that. And then they're like, no, it's $6.99. I'm like, son of a bitch, add it to the lineup.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, $6.99 a month.
Damn.
That's half the price of Netflix. And they're going to be doing original programming that you will only be able to see on the streaming service.
Yeah, like a new animated series for Monsters, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
With John Goodman and Billy Crystal.
Yeah. So it's an interesting lineup. I'm willing to pay $8 a month, $7 a month, $7 a month. Well, after taxes, it'll probably be $8, but I'm willing to pay it, given, like, if I could just watch, like, the old school Disney movies, like Robin Hood and the Aristocats.
Sword and Stone.
Yeah, I don't even care about the new shit. I don't need no Toy Story. I'm gonna catch so much flack for that, aren't I? I don't give a fuck about Toy Story. Let me watch the Aristocats. months until my eyeballs bleed.
My hope is that Disney Plus has things like DuckTales, Darkwing Duck, Adventures of Gummy Bears. Like, I want my Disney afternoon back. I want Bonkers. I want Goof Troop.
That would be awesome.
That's the shit I want.
Yeah. I wouldn't be mad at any of that. See, I told you I was going to
banish her.
I told you. Soon as I let the words fall out of my mouth, I was like, well, I'm outed.
How can you not like Toy Story?
I don't know. The first one was fine. But then after that, I was just like, okay.
Have you seen the others, or is it just you don't care about
them? No, I've seen them. I have kids. Of course I've had to watch them a goddamn million
and
times.
And Toy Story 3 didn't make you cry.
It did. It's just that, I don't know, I was disillusioned. And I'm like, this is just not my favorite as far. Toy Story falls in line with, like, Cars 2. It exists, and it's fine. It's just, I'm not attached to it. Does that make sense? I don't like Toy Story.
Yeah, makes sense. I don't agree with you at all. I think you're a horrible heathen, but...
You're not the first person to call me that.
You know, you do you. Doc Havoc making a good point. I thought the trilogy had a good full circle ending, which is why it seems dumb that they're making a fourth.
Yeah, I was really surprised that there's a fourth after the ending of the third, though.
I know. I'm surprised as well, but I'm not going to count it out until I see it.
I mean, at the same time, they're not going to not bleed the cash cow.
Yeah.
So, can't say I blame them. Just, where the fuck is it going to go?
Yeah.
You know? But, I don't know. Lion King.
Oh, fuck yeah, Lion King. I have 3 Blu-ray editions of The Lion King.
I love The Lion King. I'm actually looking forward to seeing the live action one. Aren't we a video game podcast?
I don't know. I don't know anymore. I love The Lion King. I don't give a shit. Who knows? Emperor's New Groove is my shit.
Yes, I do like that one.
I have all 4 of the Emperor's New Groove pop figures.
Nothing tickles me more when, like, number 3 will be roaming through the house and somebody bumps into her and she goes, "Dude, you threw off my groove." You think my voice is squeaky, number 3.
Oh, my Lord.
It's hilarious.
Anyway, back on to video games. Last bit of news I have is Octopath Traveler is getting a Steam release on June 7th. So if you did not have a Switch and you wanted to play Octopath Traveler, you're going to have a chance in June.
That was a Switch exclusive, wasn't it?
Yep.
Any hope for it to go anywhere else?
I have no clue. I would assume it'll eventually make it to PlayStation, but I'm sure Xbox will be left out.
Probably get shit on.
Because it's Square.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I didn't realize it was Square. That makes all the more sense now. I was just following on the it's an RPG line.
Yeah. It's a Square RPG, which...
It's double fucked.
I don't get Square. Like, they partner with Xbox for things like Tomb Raider, and then they skip bringing over how many of their games? It doesn't make sense, damn it.
No. You know what else doesn't make sense?
Huh.
Remedy's new game Control that is coming out. It's multi-platform. Was shown off on the PlayStation E3, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
They have announced that the PlayStation 4 will be getting a digital deluxe edition that will include a mission that Xbox players will not get.
Yep. They have, it's like 10 bonus items like avatars, themes, different mods for the game, and then a bonus mission, which I am so fucking sick of exclusive bullshit.
How do you really feel, Joe? I can forgive, like, you know, the PlayStation theme and the avatar and all that shit.
Yeah.
So be it. I can ignore that. But when you include a whole fucking story mission, then we're going to fight. And if I'm not mistaken, Sniper Ghost Warrior 3 pulled the same stunt.
Yeah, and that got changed.
And people threw a fit. I don't quite see people throwing as big a fit over control.
I don't think so either, because it's just one mission, where with the Sniper, it was you got the entire season pass included.
Yeah.
And then they changed it to include the season pass on Xbox as well. Hopefully Remedy changes things up, but I don't know. I don't see it happening.
How much is one mission going to change the experience? Like, I don't like the idea of a whole experience being left out, you know? Like, you can leave a lot of shit out, and I'd be like, well, that sucks, but whatever. Like, if it were, you know, cosmetic shit. But once you start leaving out an entire mission, you're getting less of a game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not cool.
Not at all. It's the same thing with, like, pre-order bonus missions, which hopefully this is just, like, a tiny side mission that takes 15 minutes to beat and isn't really integral to the story. But we won't know until it comes out.
Yeah.
But yeah, Remedy and 505, they gotta stop doing exclusive shit.
It is not good shit to do.
I hate exclusives. It's stupid.
Same.
So, any other news that you have?
No, that was it. But I was proud of myself for having something and segueing into it in a proper manner.
I am proud of you.
I did good. Next!
Next? You know what we're doing next?
No.
A giveaway.
A giveaway.
We have
about the giveaway.
Yeah, we have 3 copies of Miles and Kilo to give away. We have 6 emails, so we're going to have to break some hearts today.
Fuck, let me open a notepad.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
All right, first emails from Daniel McCammon, who says, I would love a copy of Miles and Kilo. I'm a sucker for retro-style platformers. I've also been neglecting my gamer score grind, so another great indie title would definitely help me get back to the grind. So, gamer score grind. Next email is from Oroto Tomato, who says, seems like a short but sweet game. Guess what I don't have right now? Freaking time. I'm an adult. I gotta pay bills and child support, and I need to buy more Star Wars sponsored lettuce. Wait, what? Star Wars sponsored lettuce.
I need to Google this.
The package has a shitty drawing of Kylo Ren on it. It's amazing. I need a picture of that, Oroto. Remember when only once in a while an open world game came out and it had maybe 20 hours of gameplay, including some grind and some shitty mission design? Most of the time we got short but sweet little games that can be defeated in one afternoon, so you'd feel accomplished and still have a good chunk of time to play outside with your friends or take a nice long shit. Now it's not only the opposite, but the open world games cannot be completed in less than 60 hours. It's like against the law or something. I've been playing The Witcher 3 since 1986 and I'm still only 20% of the way through. It's insanity. I can't do this shit. Know how long I've been thinking about playing Okami? And then I found out the game keeps going and going and like it's a sin to stop, making me afraid to play. I wanted to finish all Kingdom Hearts games before 3 came out. I had more than 2 years to do this. You know how many Kingdom Hearts games I played? Fucking zero. Not to say I didn't finish a bunch of games this year already, but only ones with quick completions. I want to add Miles and Kilo to that list. I need something without all the crazy AAA frivolities. Did I say the word right? I don't know, because I didn't say it right either. All the grind, just good old gameplay and style, and plings and plongs when you collect shit. Anyway, what are you going to do with those 6 days of summer? Oh my god.
Why does everybody have the idea that Miles and Kilo is an easy completion?
Yeah, no shit.
It's not. It's not.
So, wants a quick game to beat. I mean, it won't take forever to beat.
But if you're going to master it, if you're going to get those S ranks, you're going to work your fingers to the bone.
Yeah, you're going to have to earn that shit. Next email is from Latino Heat, who says, good evening to the SML podcast. I've always maintained my favorite choice of style in games I enjoy playing, and platform games always seems to be one of my favorite choices. Miles and Kilo caught my attention. You play the games portraying a boy and having a faithful dog companion on an epic journey. Fighting off monsters and animals in the game looks like a whole lot of fun, especially it being a fast-paced speedrun style platformer. It also has an 8-bit NES retro style feel to it, which I truly love. Thanks so much to the SML podcast for everything you do, and of course, for the opportunity. So, likes the NES style. Next email is from David P., who says, I'm really interested in Miles and Kilo on Xbox because I have grown to love indie games and the art style is my favorite. Thanks for the great podcast. Loves indie games. That's an easy one.
Yep.
Next also, email.
Also, thanks for great.
Yeah. Next email is from John Malcolm, who says, I'd like to win Miles and Kilo, or he says Miles and Milo, because it looks like a lot of fun, and I love the retro look and music. Thanks for the chance. A lot of people like the retro look.
Yeah.
Likes the retro look. And final email is from John Prudlow, who says, Dear SML Podcast, rather than recant the times in my childhood that I missed soccer practice to play Super Mario Brothers and the comparisons that have already been made, I'd like to take some time to tell you about an exciting product. Now, I'm not a doctor, nor do I play one on TV, but you've been suffering for too long from a despondent malaise, and it's time for a change. Renew your body with Miles and Kilo. Miles and Kilo is a fun, somewhat challenging platformer that has been known to help reduce the feeling of nausea, bloating, indescribable sadness caused by binge-watching hours of Dr. Phil and Judge Judy. If you're ready to take on life's challenges and feel better while walking or biking aimlessly in a commercial with a stupid grin on your face, then talk to your doctor about Miles and Kilo.
Oh my gosh.
If you need help with your prescription, Four Horses Games may be able to help. Common side effects of Miles and Kilo include excitement, increased attention span for gaming, hysteria, constipation, bleeding hemorrhoids, tears of sadness, tears of joy, vomiting, foot pain, thumb pain, toe pain, sore ankle, sore muscles, relaxed muscles, sore ass, tight ass, no ass, itchy crotch, itchy groin, sore groin, sinus pain, foot bunions, foot fungus, missing toes, missing finger, sore throat, loss of voice, loss of nerve, loss of money, loss of loved ones, loss of life, extra lives, addiction to video games, addiction to painkillers, addiction to gambling, addiction to sports, addiction to sex, addiction to real estate speculation, addiction to extreme activities, low blood pressure, high blood pressure, no blood pressure, feeling cold, feeling hot, feeling excited, sexual arousal, vegetative state, death, and flaccidness. If you experience an erection lasting longer than 172 hours while playing Miles and Kilo, talk to your doctor and seek medical and psychological help right away. Erections lasting longer than 48 hours are common and should be treated accordingly. So talk to your doctor about Miles and Kilo today, because I am not a doctor. I do not play a doctor on TV and I do not have the game, but I would love a copy of the game so I can experience all the sensations all at once. Thanks and take care. Holy shit. Oh my god. That might be one of my favorite entries ever.
Can we just go ahead and mark down that he wins one?
Yes. That's a win.
Ah, shit.
Holy shit. I think Eroto gets one too. That was a really good entry.
Yep.
We have four more entries and one code left. So Daniel wants the gamer score grind. Latino Heat likes the NES style. David P. loves indie games. And John Malcolm likes the retro look.
David P. did stroke our ego, though. He said we're a great podcast.
He did.
I think that's going to be the other one.
David P., you're giving it to him?
Bribery fucking works.
And Awesome Prime just dropped a couple of bits, so you know what that means.
Dropping bits!
Dropping bits indeed, Norg. Let's hear it again.
Dropping bits!
Oh, I love it. So good.
For the people in the back.
Thank you for the four bitties, Awesome Prime, and I pressed the button. So thank you for that.
Hey.
That was a good contest. Holy shit,
that,
John.
That was.
Good God. Those side effects.
I was trying to keep up with my notes writing, and I just started kept going. I was like, I'm going to stop because he's already won one. I can't.
That was amazing. That was quite possibly one of my favorite entries we've ever had in a contest.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Holy shit. Anyway, review time. We got a bunch of games to talk about. Are you ready for these?
Never. Go.
All right. First game to talk about is called Generation Zero, developed by Avalanche Studios, published by Avalanche Studios and THQ Nordic, released March 26th on Xbox One and PS4 for $39.99, on Steam for $34.99. Welcome to 1980 Sweden. The local population has disappeared and hostile machines roam the streets. Explore the open world to unravel the mystery, perfect your fighting strategies, and prepare to strike back. Play alone or together with up to three friends as you discover ways to defeat the invaders. Cole, tell us about this one because I didn't get my goddamn copy yet.
You got robbed.
I did.
So this is a first-person co-op survival shooter. You didn't get your copy. I played this shit solo. Ow, it was hard because this game is seriously meant to be played as a co-op, and there's not any kind of like scaling of the difficulty if you're playing alone. Before I get into all that though, let's go on and talk a little more about the setting of this game because it's fucking gorgeous. I was not expecting it to be this pretty at all. And I say pretty kind of loosely because it's all dystopian and it's not like there's flowers and butterflies floating around.
What was that? Flowers?
Flowers. Flowers.
There you go. That's the word I know.
It's not pretty in like a traditional springy sense. It's just that the details and the textures are incredibly well done. When you walk into a building or a house, it looks like it should look. It looks lived in and it looks pretty much what you would expect for 1980 Sweden. There's incredible detail from time accurate, time appropriate, I guess might be a little better way. Either way.
I know what you mean.
Band posters are like hanging up on walls and there's floppy disks laying around and tape decks. And you're like, yeah, this is the 80s. even like the attention to detail on the cars and stuff is just very impressive. It's a large open world. Everything takes place in the open world setting. It's very ambitious. Some sort of event has occurred I'm trying not to give away spoilers, that's resulted in there being robot, you know, AI robots wandering around and they're murderous little bastards. And so your goal is basically to uncover the plot by finding documents and collectibles that will give you more of the story while not being murdered by the murderous robots. Seems like it should be simple enough. It's a shooter, shoot the robots, and don't die.
Sounds easy enough.
The robots fucking cheat.
How do they cheat?
So, the biggest point of this kind of game is that it's just as much survival as it is first-person shooter. And so you want to find yourself in a position where you and the people you're playing with, or if you're alone in my case, the people that you're playing with can scout out an area, get an idea of where the robots are, and set up traps so that you can lure them to certain areas with, say, like you can set out a radio because they're drawn to the sound. And you want to be able to like set up traps so that you funnel them into certain areas and then take them out. Mm-hmm. Where they're not gonna bum rush you as bad. You can do everything right to try to set up one of these ambushes, but those fucking robots can see you from distances that are just unbelievable. And they will chase your ass down. So good luck getting your ambush set up before they come for you. And then, of course, the noise of a firefight with one is going to draw waves of more.
Oh, man.
And so before you know it, you're just completely overrun. And you'll have 7 or 8 robots descended upon you at a time. And you're just like, yeah, I only have so much ammo.
Too cheap.
And I can only pull the trigger so fast. One of the other things about this that becomes problematic is that there's safe houses you can unlock. You can go into buildings. But there's no buffer between around those safe houses to keep the robots from getting you while you're in them. So you could find yourself in a position where you get ambushed by robots who have seen you from God knows how far away. And they've run up on you, they ambush you, you spawn in a safe house, you go out the door, there they are.
Oh, God.
And so, like, you can't even go to the door because there will be three robots. That was my case. I had three robots just arched around the doorway. And I was stuck. I couldn't do shit. Except just lay as many bullets into them as I could till I run out, go out, die, start over, try again.
Oh, God.
It was incredibly overwhelming and frustrating. Again, with a group, it's probably far easier than what I had to go through. But it just took a lot out of me to try to get through instances like that. It just drains the fun a little when the odds are stacked against you so bad. Some kind of ability to adjust the difficulty or something would have made a big difference as far as that goes. At least let it scale when you're, you know, alone. But you can definitely tell it's a world meant for a team, and you're shit out of luck otherwise. I think what made it a little worse was that, as ambitious as the game is, the controls are really clunky, and aiming and locking on to the robots and stuff isn't quite as precise as I expect for a shooter. And so it made it a little more difficult because I'm expecting to, and I'm the kind of person who like plays with your sensitivity cranked all the way up and everything. Shooters are my forte. I'm good at them. But yeah, when I'm missing like 8 out of 12 shots, then I'm sitting there going, the fuck?
Yeah, you might not be good at some games, but shooters, you're pretty damn solid.
Shooters are my shit. And I was really struggling, and I'm like, I'm fucking with the sensitivity. I'm setting all kinds of controls here and there the best that I can. I even went into my Elite controller settings and tried to adjust some shit. I just couldn't get it to where it was as effective as I needed it to be. That's a shame. That's one of those things, though, that just, it sucks. And it would be nice if it's patched. But you can get over it if you play a game enough that you just kind of adjust to the clunky controls, which is kind of what I had to do. Fortunately, that wasn't my only complaint. I have shit for a sense of direction.
No, no.
I get lost so easily. And a big part of this game's story is told through finding the collectibles and just searching around. You can easily like get into the game, dick around, and do absolutely nothing of value except for loot cars and kill robots. And that's fine.
Kind of like what I saw Shiz doing.
Sometimes that's what you want to do, and it's fine. I play Division, and it's the same kind of concept. I get in there, and I just start walking around looting backpacks for 3 hours. And I'm okay with that kind of gameplay. But if you actually want to get through the story, then you're going to struggle, because it never pops up a waypoint that says, like, you need to be here, unless you already got to the point where you were heading that way anyway. You have to be stupid close to trigger a, oh, yeah, it's in this house. And you can find yourself going through areas where you're literally just going door to door in a neighborhood, hoping to trigger something that tells you you're close to the mission. That's not cool. I heard that.
What'd you hear?
It sounded like a truck going by.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. But
I wasn't paying attention. Ashley just told me that my goddamn Generation Zero came in today.
Should have reviewed it next week.
Oh, well. We're already a week late on it because of waiting for my copy, but...
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Anyway, it is an enjoyable game, and I did have fun just dicking around. It's just that it can be a little difficult when, you know, the AI cheats, the controls are a little clunky, and it can be difficult to even know where the fuck you're going.
Yeah.
That said, it's ambitious as fuck. Like, there isn't another word to really describe. When you set into this world, you know you're in this world. You know it feels right for how it's designed. It's just that the game itself could use a little more polish and some quality of life shit.
Now, overall, $40. What do you think of it?
I do give it a try. Like I said, I think it could just be ironed out a little bit and have some of the kinks worked out. if they support it, then I'd easily be like, oh yeah, buy it, because it was a lot of fun. Just if I could figure out where I was going. It's my problem. I just need to know where to be.
Yeah.
You know, and not like I could handle rough aiming controls and things like that. That's something you can adjust to if you play shooters a lot. You just learn to use the guns the way they are.
Yeah.
But you need to be able to know where you're going, and you need to not get ambushed by 27 robots at a time.
Oh, boy. Well, hopefully, maybe the two of us could give it some time over the weekend or something.
That sounds good. I'd go for that. I'm looking forward to spending more time with it. I just really hope they smooth out some of those rough edges.
Yeah.
It's got potential. I mean, it's a cool story, especially given, you know, it's kind of like an Ubisoft open world made a baby with Horizon Zero Dawn.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, because of the whole robots taking over and everything, it's an interesting concept. Just a little rough.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Dangerous Driving, developed and published by Three Fields Entertainment, released April 9th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99, on the Epic Game Store for $26.99. From the creative talent behind the genre-defending Burnout series, Dangerous Driving puts aggression back into the racing genre, recapturing the spirit of the past and taking it to a new place. Cole, tell us about Dangerous Driving.
So, Dangerous Driving is an arcade racer, and it kind of
you can't talk either.
I can't. I'm medicated because it's raining. That's my excuse.
You're just full of excuses.
I'm also full of not being able to pronounce things properly.
Yay.
Dangerous Driving is an arcade racer that revels in its recklessness. It was developed by some of the original creators of Burnout. Hey, everybody loves Burnout.
Damn
I
right.
I never played Burnout.
What?
Yeah. But oh
my God. We're going to have a serious discussion later on.
I'm about to get yelled at.
You've never played any Burnout game?
No, and I have Burnout Paradise. I think the 360 version. When it Games with Gold?
I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure I have a Burnout that was Games with Gold at some point. But it's just, and it's funny because I really enjoy arcade racers, and I know that's what Burnout is, and yet I just never put the time into it.
But as far as
Dangerous Driving goes, this was developed by Burnout creators, so it's definitely got some elements from Burnout that fans of that series. I had to go and like do research on this and look up what Burnout was about and see how it played so that I could make comparisons.
Well, I could make comparisons as well, because I played the shit out of the old Burnout games, put a bunch of time into Dangerous Driving, and I'm enjoying what's there, but I do have some gripes with it. But you go first and tell us more about the game.
So the game is basically just a campaign experience with a ton of different racing modes. You have your normal races, and you have face-offs and elimination. And then there's a road rage mode for if you just really enjoy smashing the fuck out of people.
Fuck yeah. Road rage is my jam.
Yeah. Road rage is a good way to take your frustrations from the rest of the game out. Where a lot of race games want to reward you for clean driving skills, I'm looking at you, Forza. Dangerous Driving is just unapologetic. It wants you to drive on the wrong side of the road. It wants you to trade paint. It wants you to hit people in the bumper. It wants you to crash them motherfuckers into a guardrail.
It does.
And enjoy it.
And you will.
And it's not even a case of like, oh, it's an option as a thing to do. Road rage straight up requires you to take out the other racers if you want to win.
Yeah, I would go so far as to say the standard races also require you to take out the AI if you want to win, because the AI are some cheating sons of bitches.
Oh my God. I did get silver a couple times without taking anybody out before I really caught on that clean driving was bullshit in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause that's just my natural state in a racer is like, don't hit the walls, don't hit the other things. Cause that's what you do when you drive is don't hit shit. But this one is just like, no, we want you to fucking hit everything.
Yeah.
And so I was getting silver, but I just couldn't quite catch those motherfuckers, and I couldn't figure out why. It's because they cheat. And they do cheat. And that leads me to one of my biggest gripes about the game, is that you are either 20 seconds ahead or 20 seconds behind.
Yeah.
And there is no in between. None.
there's a little in between, but not much.
No, there's no in between. I don't know why you want to lie, though.
I've had a little bit of in between.
Yeah, that one time where I wrecked and had 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Because it hadn't caught up to being 20 seconds behind yet.
Yeah.
That's basically it. I also have, I think it's the road rage races that did it, where when you take somebody out, it does like this mini cutscene.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to see them wreck and like all their flaming, flipping glory. And it's fantastic. But then like it cuts you back to the race and you were watching the cutscene and then you weren't ready for the race. And so you smash something head on because it's like, well, you pulled me out of the race in the middle of it to watch somebody go up in flames. Now, of course, I'm going to hit an oncoming car. I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah, for the most part, I would have no issues with taking someone out and then cutting back to the action. But every now and then, it would cut back with a car directly in front of you and you mm-hmm. would wreck. Not all the time, but enough to just be annoying.
I had it happen in a curve, too. Like, oh, you're going stupid fast and then you come back and you're in a curve and there's just not enough time to brake anymore.
Or so you drift go slamming it, into
and
the
you're
wall.
Just like, yeah, I like walls. And then, of course, because... you know, you were already 20 seconds behind.
Now you're 30 seconds behind.
Now you're just dead fucked. Is that all there is? There is a good variety of races. There are several different car classes. I think there's 6 in all. I don't feel like there's any difference in them, though. None whatsoever. Like, all the cars move the same. They hit shit the same. They go the same speeds. I didn't feel like there was enough variety to justify having that many different car classes or making any kind of difference. It just felt like it was a cosmetic thing more than an actual effect on the race.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily mad about that being that kind of situation. It's just that you expect there to be a little bit of difference between, say, a sedan and an SUV. Or a sports car and an SUV. There's also nothing in the way of customization for it. Like you can choose your car's color and whether or not it has racing stripes, and that's about it. And you don't even like get to customize the color. You flip through a handful of like predetermined colors. It's either orange or black or orange with black stripes.
Or blue. I picked blue.
There was blue. There was blue. There was red. There's your standard car colors. There was yellow. I had to say it because everybody would have been disappointed if I didn't. And yes, that's what color mine was because that yeller. Is my favorite color. So, but like I said, it's not enough difference in the cars to really make any kind of big difference, and especially not with the customization, you know, lacking in what it is. It's just pick a car, pick a generic color, and go.
Yeah.
The other issue I had, the game is really pretty, especially given that you're flying at the speed of fucking light. You're going really fast, and usually when you're playing these racing games, everything goes by so quickly, like you can't tell anything about it. but you could actually get a lot of detail out of the scenery in this game. However, you also got a lot of sun glare.
Oh, God, yeah. Did you have the sun is in-
There are some levels where you just straight up cannot fucking see.
Yeah.
And it is the tunnel levels are cool as hell, though. Those were great mm-hmm. when you get to go through the tunnel. But when you come out and that sun is like, hi, bitches. And I'm like, no, crash.
Yeah, visibility is definitely an issue with the game. I wish there were more camera angles. Like, I mm-hmm. wanted one higher up to get a better view of what's in the distance.
You're right up on your ass or first person.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a technical limitation that resulted in just those two camera angles, but I wish there was a higher camera angle just so I could have a better view of what's coming at me. Because for a game that encourages dangerous driving, you want to see what the hell you're doing.
But it's dangerous because you can't.
Yeah.
Like, it's unintentional danger.
Yeah.
Because you can't see that there's, you know, a car coming in the oncoming lane. It's just going to smash right into your face as soon as you come up over a little bit of a bump.
Yeah, I will say my biggest gripe with the game, though, is still the AI. The AI in this game races damn near flawlessly. And if
even the last place fuckers.
I know. And even worse is if it's during one of the standard races where, you know, it involves taking out your opponent and just trying to finish first, you can have your pedal to the metal boosting constantly. I was boosting constant for like a minute straight and I got passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had that happen too.
Like the AI is just, it's cheap. It is blatantly cheap. I can understand they want cars to be around you so you could take them out. But don't make it that cheap. When I'm inches away from a finish line and cars just speed right by me mm-hmm. for no reason, that's some bullshit.
There were instances, too, where you could actually see the cars fucking up. They would hit the guardrail, they would wreck, they would hit oncoming traffic, and then they would literally pass you 3 seconds later.
Yeah.
And you're like, the fuck you even come from? You should still be smoldering back there.
Yeah. JT saying that's how all arcade racing games are to a degree, but I think dangerous driving, it's just a bit overkill with how cheap and how rubber bandy the AI is. Like, I want to be able to feel like I have a shot at actually winning races because of my skill and not out of luck.
Right. And it is luck. It really is. Like, if it just decides to rubber band there right before you cross the finish line, there ain't shit you can do about that.
Nothing.
There was one where I came in sober when I was still trying to pull the clean racing thing. Yeah. And that's how come I got sober, because they rubber banded past me, like, right at the finish line. Fuck you too.
Did you have any kind of performance issues? Because I know Carnage was saying that he ran into some slowdown and some stuttering. He's playing on an S. I know you play on an S. I was on an X, and I didn't notice anything except for, like, one time driving through a tunnel, it hiccuped for, like, half a second. Aside from that, the game was nice and smooth and no issues.
I didn't have any issues, but I also have it loaded onto my solid-state drive. Mm. So that may have an effect in it.
That might.
And I could move it over to my regular drive and run it and see what it does, but as far as running it on the S with a solid state drive, it was fine.
All right. So maybe it was just, it could just be an issue on Carnage's side as well. You never know.
Carnage just sucks.
he said he ran into some frame issues. I didn't run into anything of note. So I was pleased with it performance wise.
That's always one of the hard things too, with now that there's like multiple Xboxes, it's you could say a game runs fantastic on an X, and then somebody's like, well, I played it on an S and it was shit. And I was like, yeah, well
sucks for you.
There's so many like potential issues, especially because you can use so many different
models.
Yeah, as well as add-ons, just like with different hard drives and stuff.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I have a solid state drive. You have external hard drives. My buddy Studa uses one of those docks and uses regular laptop hard drives on his Xbox. So I mean, anything can affect the way a game performs. And yeah. sometimes it's hard to pinpoint it.
Overall, but I did though, not have patience. Yeah, overall, though, $30 on this one. What do you say?
I do give it a try. It's a solid racer. I just wish it wasn't so bullshit as far as, like, the AI cheating.
Yeah, I wish there was more customization options. I wish there was just more in general. Like, the game left me wanting more. I want more road rage races. I want more opportunities to wreck other people. Like, I like the road rages and the standard races more than, like, the time trials.
Yeah.
Because the time trials, the times on some of those are just bullshit, I'll say it now. If you want to try getting, like, a gold medal on some of those time trials, good luck.
Yeah.
You need to be flawless and hope that traffic is on your side.
And by on your side, we mean not on your side of the road.
Yes. They stay the fuck away from you. But I agree. It's definitely a try. I dropped $30 on it, and I think it was worth it. So I'm happy with my purchase.
Good.
Next game to talk about is called Cook, Serve Delicious 2, developed and published by Vertigo Gaming, released April 10th on Xbox One and Switch for $12.99. Run your restaurant and pick up shifts in your quest to be the best chef in the world. Delicious dishes, intense gameplay. Cole, tell us about it.
So this is an absolutely insane management sim. I have not played any of the Cook, Serve Delicious games until this one, although I had seen them played. So I had an idea of what I was getting going into it. You pick your restaurant, you take a shift, you'll have orders that pop up. You need to complete the orders, kind of think Diner Dash style. I love these kind of games. And so I was really looking forward to this.
Jeff Ball said he worked on Cook, Serve Delicious and made a bunch of sound effects. That's awesome.
Fantastic. And he did a good job with them. The sounds are really solid. I do want to say the controller binding for this is a fucking nightmare. And that tends to be the biggest complaint when it comes to any kind of simulator, especially any kind of management simulator, getting those controller bindings down is the most difficult thing in the world. And they're going to be different preferences for every kind of player. So in this case, you've got your restaurant screen, your customers are coming in, they're placing your orders. The orders are on a bar on the left-hand side. And you'll have to go through and press X when you're ready to take an order. So you press X, and then it will come up with the order in the center of the screen. Down at the bottom will be all the ingredients that you need. On the right-hand side, it will pop up with the ingredients you can choose from. This is where shit gets real. There are so many different possibilities for even the most mundane orders that you are flipping through pages of ingredients
and options.
And then the pages are broken down into a left and a right side. So if you want to do something as simple as put ketchup on a corn dog, first off, you need to make the corn dogs in a holding station, which are in another menu. Then you'll want to take the order. It will give you the corn dog that will tell you, okay, we want, what did I say, ketchup? Ketchup on this corn dog. Then you've got to flip, press, I think it's RB, wasn't it? To go through the, yeah, I think it was so. RB to go through the menus. I can do it out of like muscle memory at this point when I'm playing the game.
Yeah, but remembering buttons is difficult.
To stop and think about it. And you're timed on these orders. So if you're too fucking slow, you've got pissed off customers and that goes against you. And the whole rating for the game is don't take too long. Yeah. Don't have any pissed off customers if you want a gold rating. So then you're flipping through these mountains of pages of possible ingredients. And then you find the one that you want, and then you got to remember, is it on the left side? Do I pull the left trigger and then press the face button, or do I pull the right trigger and press the... You can literally have 8 to 10 inputs just to put ketchup on something.
Yeah, it's insane. how much shit you have to do in this game for the most basic of dishes.
It's interesting how, like, you adapt to it, but you never really memorize any kind of particular patterns, because even switching from restaurant to restaurant, there's different ingredients, they're on different pages, so you can't just be like, oh, well, I need a hot dog and that's on page 2, press B or RB twice. You can't do that because you go to the next restaurant and hot dogs might be, you need to press RB 3 or 4 times to get to it.
Yeah.
Why?
Keeps you on your toes.
It's so stressful. And I'll be perfectly honest. I play this shit. I play these kind of games. Fuck ton. These are my alternative shooters and alternative hops. Like, I love these kind of games. And I'm genuinely pretty good at them. I never got a gold medal by myself. I was able to play co-op. And I played co-op with number one. And we managed to get... After about 2 hours of her really, like, struggling to get her hang of the controls, which at this point I had already had a couple hours in. I was ahead of her. It wasn't really fair. But once we both had a good hang of the controls, then we were able to go in and get our first gold. It took us too goddamn long.
Damn.
And it was really stressful. And I remember even then we would just have to start, because if you mess up anything at all in the order line, you can't trash it. Like, oh, if you fuck something up in Overcooked, you just throw it away and you make another one, the end. You can't do that. You just have to give the customer whatever shit you dumped on there, whether it's what they wanted or not. So if you're trying to not have any negative orders and you hit one button wrong out of the 27 inputs it takes to make a corn dog, you fucked up the whole day and you have to start again.
Oh yeah.
So it was surprisingly difficult. That said, it's a lot of fucking fun once you get the hang of it.
If
there are 30 different restaurants and 350 different menus.
Jesus.
You are not going to run out of shit to do. You are going from the most mundane. And you know what's funny?
What?
I keep fussing about the corn dogs and there being so many button inputs. The most stressful one that her and I played at the time, she and I played at the time, was the coffee shop. And it seemed like it should have been so mundane, because they actually made the drinks in Cook Serve Delicious 2 easier than they were in Cook Serve Delicious 1. And yet still the coffee shop and the ice cream shop had me and her both just like ready to pull our hair out and scream. We could not figure out what we were doing wrong.
Oh,
and
boy.
I don't think we even managed to get a bronze.
Holy
when we
hell.
Did the coffee shop. So we definitely need more time and more practice.
And you two were pros at Overcooked.
Yeah. I mean, we blew through Overcooked. We got the completions and everything. And it was no big deal. And we were just... I thought she was going to break down crying.
Fuck you, Mom!
She said, it's so hard. I don't understand why we can't mess it up.
Yeah, Jeff's saying he thinks the game might be easier on a PC with a keyboard and mouse. I would agree on that. I think they did a good job adapting it to controller, but it's still really, really difficult to get used to everything that you have to do.
If ever there was an Xbox game that would benefit from mouse and keyboard support, here it is.
Well, Vertigo Gaming, if you're listening, Xbox supports mouse and keyboard, so maybe that might be an option to look into, bring the mouse and keyboard support.
I do want to say I had one other hiccup, too. At one point, we were going to play co-op, and I set it to two-player mode, but we didn't have batteries for the second controller because we have a battery problem in this house. We have too many consoles, not enough batteries. And so we didn't have a second controller ready to play with. And then she decided she was going to do something else while the battery's charged. And for the life of me, I could not get the player 2 needs to plug in a controller at the top to go away. Even after I set it back to single player, after I went into a game by myself as a single player, it still said player two's controller is disconnected at the top. I couldn't see part of the screen. I couldn't see what I was doing. I had to shut the whole game down and relaunch it. And so then I thought, that was really odd. And I wonder if that was a one-time thing. And no, it kept fucking doing it.
Oh, boy.
So that needs fixed. That and mouse and keyboard support. And you got the best goddamn game I've ever played.
Well, then $13, what do you say?
This is a buy it. I think it's a lot of fun. It is stressful, and it's definitely only going to like appeal to people who are really into those really stressful, hardcore management sims. If you think that this is just going to be some light point and click, don't do it.
Think again, motherfucker.
Yeah, this makes Overcooked look like a cakewalk. So just don't. But if you got somebody to help you out, because you're definitely going to need a second pair of hands, then have a good time. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah. Next game to talk about is called Modern Tales Age of Invention, developed by Orchid Games, published by our friends at Artifacts Mundi, released April 5th on Xbox One for $14.99. Paris 1900, during the World Expo, an unknown force kidnaps the brightest minds of the century. To what sinister end? Step into the shoes of Emily Patterson, the daughter of one of the captured scientists, to conduct your own investigation, follow the trail of the captor, and thwart his evil plans before the fate of the world is sealed. Cole, tell us about this one.
So this is an Artifacts Mundi game. It's point and click. It's a hidden object puzzler. And it's basically every Artifacts Mundi game ever.
All right. So $15, what do you say?
If you played them all, you played them all. I will say though that this one has a different story in that it doesn't have any of like the Nordic mythology aspect. It goes for the steampunky, you know, 1900s.
Have we seen one developed by Orchid Games before, or are they new?
That is new. They did stick with the whole, you know, female protagonist thing, which we saw them deviate from recently. So I was glad to go back to that little aspect of the Artifacts Mundi games. But, Orchid's a new one for me to hear from them. That said, They did a really good job, like, following the tried and true formula of an Artifacts Mundi game. There were a ton of really good hidden object puzzles. Everything was really clear. Sometimes, especially when outside companies make Artifacts Mundi games, you run into a hitch where, like, there are items that they use a word to describe it where you're not familiar with what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're Americans. We don't use them fancy words. and so sometimes, like, I've had to Google to figure out what a thing I was supposed to be looking for was. I'm like, the fuck is that even? Or they would straight up use a word, and then, like, the item that you would find would be completely different. And I'm like, the fuck is that? So there's some chaos in there every now and then. This one was fine. Like, I breezed through it. I'm like, yeah, I know what I'm looking for. Everything is simple enough. And I just really enjoyed it. In fact, this one had an achievement that none of the others have had before. It was to do 3 hidden object puzzles within 10 minutes. So, like, your time spent in all 3 had to come up under the 10-minute mark.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it on accident. I didn't even realize it. And normally, like, the hidden objects are a little more of a struggle because of the language barrier that takes place sometimes.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, I can get through one that where you got to do it under a minute if I take it to casual and just randomly click.
Yeah. Just mash that A button.
But I usually like to do my first playthrough on expert and you know, get the full experience. And this one was simple and reasonable enough that I was just clicking through them without any kind of issues whatsoever. And I can appreciate that. Sometimes it's nice to not have to Google what the fuck I'm looking for. This one... Remember when there was the whole hullabaloo about Artifacts Mundi raising their prices? Yeah. And they said that it was so we would get higher quality games.
Mm-hmm.
This one doesn't qualify for that in the animation department.
No?
No, unfortunately not. And I will say, as far as the stories go, I like that this one wasn't full of like the Nordic mythology stuff, because they kind of played that to death. But it was kind of a forgettable story, and it didn't really hang with you or feel that important to what you were doing. Mm-hmm. This was one of the first times where I was like, you can play this one with no concept of what you're doing and still get through it.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily a negative. It was just odd, because at least in the other ones, you had to keep up with the story enough to know what you were looking for. And yeah, you didn't quite have to do that this time. But the animations were definitely the bigger downfall.
I did appreciate that some of the character models were like full-on 3D models and not just like a static image with a mouth that stretches awkwardly.
Yeah, that is something that they have been doing better with, especially since they did the whole price jump thing. But a lot of the cutscenes have that weird, jerky stop motion effect to them.
Yeah, or even some of them just look awkward. Like when they were flying to the one area, you could see the place in the distance. You could see that it was just like a 2D image awkwardly moving on the left side of the screen.
Yeah.
there's some jankiness and awkwardness.
This one is, you know, if you had to pick a favorite Artifacts Monday title, this one's not going to be at the top of the list. That said, it's not particularly bad. It's just, I would say the puzzles in this one were some of the better that we have. They were just kind of like the right level of challenging without making you want to bash your head into the controller. Some of them have been that bad. I actually did struggle with one. The ones where you've got the three rings and you've got to move the balls around so that all the colored balls are on one certain type of ring.
Mm-hmm.
I'm usually pretty good at those, and the one on this one was tough. It was a fight. So I appreciated that it was a little more of a challenge. At least I'm not getting to the point where it's like, oh, I've played 74 of these.
Which I think you have played 74 of them.
They had 47 on Steam at one point. And
good Lord.
So yeah, I'm probably around 20 or so at this point that have been brought to Xbox. And then there's a few I've played mobile as well. So, I'm probably up there.
Well, Modern Tales, Age of Invention, $15. What do you say?
I do still give it a buy. It. You can't be mad at Artifacts Monday games. You know what you're getting. If you've played one, then you know, yes, I'm going to like it, or no, I'm not, from there. And they don't deviate from the formula, but they change it up just enough that each time it's like, yeah, this is a nice palate cleanser. I've been shooting people and saving the world, and sometimes you just
want to solve some puzzles.
Sometimes you want to go find a hammer in the weeds. <It's fun. laughs> and I enjoy it for that. It plays well. Excuse me. It's challenging without making you want to pull every hair you got out. Thanks, Cook Serve Delicious, too.
And I don't have many left, so that's good for me.
I got a lot, but it's gray. Some games just make it grayer. This one's not one of them. Sometimes you just want to relax a little. And it's good. It's good for that.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yay.
Next game to talk about is called Flutter Bombs, developed and published by Earthbound Interactive, released April 12th on Xbox One for $19.99. Experience nature's wrath in this top-down twin-stick shooter, command up to 10 different wing sets, each with a unique bombing tactic. Unleash fury with powerful weapon upgrades and defend your grove with Flutter Bombs. Cole, what is Flutter Bombs?
I mean, you basically just described every aspect of the game.
All right, then, what do you say?
We're done here. For the second time in a row. No. It is a top-down twin-stick shmup. And usually when you have that genre combination, like, you expect something insane with like aliens, or you're fighting against aliens, or
zombies, or monsters.
There's some kind of like hardcore raw. It's a dude game, you know. And yet this one's a fucking butterfly.
Yay!
And it's such a shakeup that when I started playing it, and I'm like, wait, okay, you know, it's Flutter Bomb, it's butterflies. Wait, it's a shmup. I didn't know what I was doing because it's like learn to fly, and I'm like, yay, I'm gonna fly through rings, and I'm like, no, why do I have to shoot things? I don't understand what happened here. I liked it though. I really did. Like, it works well. You have an area that is basically, you know, the grove you're trying to protect, and there are just swarms and swarms of more aggressive bugs that will come flying at you, and you fly around with your little butterfly and you shoot the shit out of them with nectar. You will run out of nectar, which serves as your ammo, but there are orbs of it on the flowers in the grove. So you just go around and pick up more nectar as you need it to keep on blasting away at the bugs. You do have a health bar. You're not going to die very often unless you're extremely bad at shmups.
Like, or unless one of the stage hazards gets you, which is an instant death, which fuck those.
How many times did a fish jump up and get you?
The fish, not at all, but the little, whatever the hell it is on the second stage that shoots up at you, that's got me a couple of times.
I was going to assume you had got eaten by a fish. I almost got eaten by the fish. Once I realized it was coming up out of the water, I was like, oh, hell no.
I did have the fish eat an enemy, though, and that was an achievement, so that was cool.
See, I tried to make that happen after I figured out that they jumped up, but I couldn't get it to happen, so I got to keep working on that one. That's okay, because you want to go back and like replay the levels to try to get a higher score. Just to say that you did. I lost my train of thought.
It happens.
Yeah. I was thinking about the fish jumping up at me.
So tell me more about this fish. He's an asshole.
And some levels have more than others, and they're jerks. There are 10 different butterflies that you can choose to play as, and each one has its own special ability. The first one that you get, he basically just like drops nectar bombs down, and that's fantastic for killing those horrible ass spiders that shoot webs at you. Mm-hmm. there's other ones that can, you know, make spikes appear on the ground or whatever. So there's different abilities. 10 butterflies, and then the campaign has 10 different levels as well. For each level, there is a bar at the top in the center that you're going to want to fill. And the way you fill the bar is by killing the bugs. Killing enough bugs to fill that bar then takes you to a boss. There's kind of a checkpoint between the part where you're filling your bar and then before you get to the boss. So if the boss kills you, you're not like stuck at the beginning trying to fill that bar up and going through getting your power-ups and everything again. Keep losing my place. I'm sorry. I don't know what I was like. I made some horrible scribbles. I think I was just disturbed by the fish.
How many dicks did you draw?
I haven't drawn any dicks.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
I wrote this on the computer. That's part of why I'm having trouble keeping up with it, too.
So just an eight, a couple of equal signs, and a D.
Yeah.
There you go.
The campaign doesn't have any kind of actual story to it, which is plenty fun. But it does have 10 different locations that you can go through. You can also unlock a boss rush mode. So if you don't want to go through the whole hassle of like killing as many bugs to get to the boss, if you just want to fuck up bosses, you can do that. But you have to unlock it later. There's also a survival mode if you just want to see how long you can last against waves and waves of bugs. In typical shmup fashion, there are upgrades that you can get as you play. So basically, you start with like a lame, fragile-ass butterfly that can shoot nectar and drop bombs. And as you kill more and more more of the bugs, then eventually power-ups will show up and you can go, and you'll go from, you know, having one line of nectar that you shoot to having two, all the way up to having five. If you get larger kill streaks where, you know, at times you will have a combo of, say, 35, 40, 45 that you've killed in a row, then you can be super awesome and get all kinds of power-ups, like dragonflies that'll fly along beside of you and shoot as well.
Which is always cool to get back up in this game.
Yeah, you need it.
It gets hectic.
You get overrun. I think one of the best aspects of this game is that even with as many things going on the screen as there is, you don't have any kind of like slowdown or boggish lagginess or anything like that. Like it,
yeah, and it's a good looking game fine. Too.
It is really pretty. You don't expect a shmup to look like this.
Yeah.
I cannot get that through enough. Like it was not what I expected at all. I mean, it's a pretty game. It's unique in that you know, you're a butterfly of all fucking things. Probably one of the most fragile insects you can think of. And yeah, yet here you are just blowing through.
Yeah. I think the jankiest looking thing in the game was the company logo at the very beginning. Like I saw the game start up and the company logo looked like something out of the 80s. It wasn't the most impressive company logo. And I was like, oh boy, is this game going to be kind of like janky or awkward? And the game started and it was gorgeous.
Right. I wasn't expecting. I also, there's no like title art for the game.
Yeah, it's just an Unreal 4 logo.
And I'm like,
I don't know if that updated today or not since it just released.
I don't know. When I look, it's sitting there on my resume right now and it's still
an Unreal logo.
And you were like, oh, we're going to do an interview for this one. And I'm going, oh boy. So do not be deceived by the lack of a title screen or title art and that company logo at the beginning, because the game is stunning and just not what you're going to expect. It's fantastic, though.
Yeah, I will say the price worries me a bit. I think $20 is kind of steep on this one. I would have preferred to see it at 10, maybe 15.
Yeah.
That's something we could always bring up during the interview on the next episode and see what the decision behind the pricing is. But for $20, what's there? What do you say?
I do still give it a buy it. I think it's just so unique as a shmup that I was just really in tune to it. And I had such a good time.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Final game to talk about this week is called Super Weekend Mode, developed by Pixel Teriyaki, published by Rattlake Games, released April 9th on PS4, April 10th on Xbox One, April 12th on the Switch for $4.99. Super Weekend Mode is a cutesy looking game where hearts must be caught, bunnies must be crushed, and bad needs to be shot. We will see a princess chasing a thief through the labyrinths of despair in a bid to get her belongings back. Let's get this out of the way. This game has been getting a lot of attention lately because of how quick of a completion this can be.
I spent more time writing this review than it takes to complete this game.
I timed myself last night because I played it on PS4, I played it on PS Vita, and I got through it fairly quick to get the platinum trophies on both of them. So I bought it on Xbox, and I fired it up, and from the time the splash screen disappeared to the time I got 1,000 achievement points, this includes the screen logos, the company logos, the copyright stuff, the title screen loading up, 4 minutes, 26 seconds.
Wow.
That is not a joke. I timed it.
That's incredible.
That is how quick of a completion this game is. So we got to get that out of the way. If you're an achievement whore, congratulations. You just found a new avatar. It's not as easy as Avatar because Avatar is just pushing one button for 5 minutes, but it's probably quicker than Avatar.
Yeah. And it's not complicated. It's two buttons.
Yeah. So tell us what the game is.
So this is a bare bones style arcade game, basically. As you said in the summary, princess shit got stolen and now you gotta help her get her back. I think the enemy was legitimately just called that guy. I don't think he had a name beyond that. If he did, I missed it. There's not a lot of effort put in as far as that goes. And it's fine. There doesn't need to be. For a game like this, sometimes it just is what it is. It has a very retro art style. There's a lot of vibrant colors. The princess has a lot of options, surprisingly. You choose different costumes for her, but there are different aspects to each costume in that you can have extra lives or you can gain lives back at the end of a level, I think was one of them. There was one that made bosses have more hit points. So there were pros and cons. It can make the game easier. It can make the game more difficult depending on what you picked. Once you actually start playing, oh, before that, you could also choose to turn the auto fire on and off. So
default is on. So yeah, why even bother?
If you don't want to have the game shoot for you, then I guess turn it off, but I don't know why you would. And there are three difficulties. So you can actually make it harder on yourself if you want to. But again, I don't know why you would want to.
Yeah. Well, because one of the achievements is to play on the hardest difficulty, not to beat the game on the hardest difficulty, literally just to start a game on the hardest difficulty.
Yeah, that's the long and short of it right there. So the way that this actually plays, once you get past setting up, making everything super pussy crybaby mode, is that you have hearts falling down from the top of the screen. There's a boss in the middle of everything, and you have two paddles at the bottom. Each paddle is kind of locked to a two-column movement range within the play area. And the blue one is mapped to your left bumper. The red one is bumped to your is mapped to your right bumper. So done. And basically, the hearts fall down, and you want to make sure that your paddles are in the right column so that they hit the hearts. Now, it gets a little more difficult at some point, and skulls will start to fall down, and you don't want to hit skulls. So you got to be more careful not to miss the hearts, but also not to hit skulls. Hit it, or missing a heart, though, is not necessarily a game over. Just as you miss them, the screen area gets smaller and smaller, so obviously you have less reaction time. But it takes quite a few. you can miss a lot before you get into any kind of trouble. It is fairly easy. Are there only three levels, period? Or is it just...
No, it goes longer. It's just there's only achievements for the first.
There's only achievements. I actually haven't beat the third level yet, but I was actually playing it on a harder difficulty just to see if I could. Because I was like, no, I'm going to go at this and give it a fair shake. So, yeah, I didn't actually even make it to the third one on the harder difficulty because I was dying a lot. But I was trying to not be an achievement whore for a review game. So I was trying to make it harder on myself. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to go back tonight and get the achievements and get the easy completion. It's just that for the sake of the review, I was trying to be legitimate.
Makes sense.
A legitimate games journalist. It is so cut and dry and easy to play, though. And really, its saving grace is that it is cheap and easy, 1K. And that's what you're going to be buying it for. Story is not going to shake your world. The gameplay is not going to shake your world. It's just something to load up and blow 5 minutes in and be done with. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to always be more than that.
I wouldn't be shocked if this one sells more than some of the other games we covered this week, just because it's $5 and an easy completion.
Absolutely.
There's going to be a lot of people buying this game specifically just to get 1,000 gamer score.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's not a bad thing.
No. I mean, if it works and if it's a sales model that you're expecting, and at this point you can't help but expect or think that Rataleika is just expecting that to be what happens.
Yeah, because we had Metagal last week, which was another fairly easy, 10-minute mm-hmm. completion from Rataleika. We've had a couple other games in the past from Rataleika that were easy 10-15-minute completions. I think this might just be their new achievement model, which is going to do well for people.
Yeah. I mean, the only one I can think of that they had that wasn't an easy completion was One More Dungeon. And I think they learned their lesson from that. And they were just like, never mind, we're good. $5 easy games for everybody.
Not to say all of their games are going to be like that, but I think they may have found a niche and might be working out well for them.
By God, let it work for them.
Well, $5 on Super Weekend Mode, what do you say?
I give it a fuck it, why not? If you like gamer score any at all, or retro games, then you scratching both itches.
Yeah, it's fun, so it's cute, it's goofy, and it's an easy 1,000 or an easy platinum.
Go for it.
On PlayStation. And even better, if you buy it on PlayStation, you get the PS4 and the Vita version. So that's 2 platinum trophies for $5.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yuppers.
Those bastards.
Gotta love it. Oh, man. But yeah, that is it for this episode. We made it through. It has been a fairly long one. Oh, well.
It happens sometimes.
Big thanks to Chris Baker and Mel Kirk from Zen for coming on and chatting with us. It was great having those guys back on. It's a bummer Stemmage couldn't be here, but maybe next time.
Yeah, he had to put up with me this time.
Ah, well, what are you going to do?
It's fine.
Since Grant wasn't here, we'll just play more of his music on the show.
That sounds good.
I played it last episode. I'll fucking play it more this episode. You can't stop me. I do what I want. You don't know me.
Your execution, can you?